morning. It's Todd Zwillick here, filling in for John Hockenberry, and I'm here with Celeste, of course. It's hours before the Christmas deadline set by Senate Democrats to pass their health care bill. A vote is expected to take place by 7, starting at 7 Eastern time this morning. And though Democrats are confident they will get the simple majority, 51 votes, to push this bill through, there's still a lot of people on both sides in their own group and among Republicans who don't like the bill. But we can also start to talk about what the policy is going to look like, because things are finally moving into shape and we're starting to get an idea of what's going to be in this bill. Mary Agnes Carey is a senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. She's back with us now, standing outside, I believe, still right on Capitol Hill. Hi, Mary Agnes.
Hi there.
So, Mary Agnes, now that the Senate is finally getting this bill out the door, we can finally ask and put a point on it. We should have a pretty good idea now. I want to ask you, a family of four, okay, that makes $60,000 but doesn't have health insurance at work, what do they get, and do they get it as soon as the president signs the bill?
Well, it will depend. Let's say, I think you said they don't have insurance. There'll be a reinsurance pool for high-risk folks, people that can't get health insurance. They might be able to benefit immediately from that. Starting in 2014 in the Senate bill, 2013 in the House bill, that family would qualify for a subsidy from the federal government that they could use to help purchase insurance. Both bills would have health insurance exchanges. They're run a bit differently. In the Senate, they'd be done on a state-by-state basis. In the House, you'd have a national exchange. But both view the exchange as a way for people to be able to shop for health insurance. Right now, let's say this family would have to buy in the individual market. You're not buying, you know, your employer's not buying on your behalf. It's tough to get insurance, especially if you've had a medical condition. It's expensive. And the hope is that this bill is targeted just towards a family like that to help them be able to get coverage if they haven't had it so far.
Okay, that family qualifies for subsidies and they get access to an exchange that's supposed to make insurance easier to shop for and hopefully will make it cheaper. Mary Agnes Carey, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back to you later in the program this morning. You know, this final legislation in the Senate has been, you know, Democrats have 60 votes, but this legislation has been shaped by the threat of a filibuster and holding up this bill for weeks and months. Julian Zelizer is a congressional historian and author of Arsenal of Democracy, The Politics of National Security from World War II to the War on Terrorism. He joins us now. And we're also joined by Alan Simpson, former Republican senator from Wyoming. He was the Senate Republican whip from 1985 to 1995. They're both here to talk about the history and the use of the filibuster. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
You bet.
Julian, let me start with you. The most famous filibuster stories go back to trying to pass the Civil Rights Act. Most people don't know that the House was passing civil rights legislation since the 30s, and it wasn't until the late 50s that it finally passed the Senate because of the filibuster.
That's true. The filibuster was the great enemy of civil rights proponents in the 1940s and 1950s. As the bills finally got out of the House, the Southern caucus in the Senate was able to use this rule. At the time, it required 67 votes to end a filibuster to block any progress until both 1957 and then 64 when legislation passed. But the NAACP regularly listed filibuster reform as important as ending lynching or ending public segregation.
But Julian, help me out here. The majority always wants filibuster reform, right? Because they see the minority holding up all their bills.
Absolutely. I mean, the majority is often frustrated with the way that the Senate works. And you see the parties kind of flip back and forth on these positions. And I think that often makes this reform harder to achieve. I mean, you could look at the newspaper in 2004 and 2005 and find all kinds of speeches by Democrats defending the filibuster, the same ones who today are calling for some kind of reform.
Senator Simpson, why filibusters so much more common now than they were 50 years ago? I mean, even routine legislation now requires 60 votes often with the attendant delaying tactics. Why so much more common now?
Well, I think just because of the numbers. When you get near 60, I mean, you're near the magic. You're into the magic kingdom. And I think that's why it is. But Julian is quite correct. It was the Western and Southern senators that resisted the civil rights bill on the basis of an intrusion into personal rights, business endeavors, and so on. But the filibuster is like a giant wheel, like a Rube Goldberg wheel with boots on it, and it'll kick you in the fanny one time, and then as it rotates, it'll kick the other guy in the fanny. And it is a great protector. It's frustrating. It drove us crazy when I was the assistant to Bob Dole for 10 years. But let me tell you, I doubt that they'll ever get rid of it. But remember, there's always a centrist group There was that 7 and 7 group, 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats.
That's that Gang of 14.
Destroyed the nuclear option. You don't want to ever get to that, but there are centrists, and they'll surface again in the health care bill when this baby comes back from conference. It'll look like the tar baby.
Now, that 7 and 7 you're talking about, Senator Simpson, was around the issue of filibustering judicial nominations, but you piqued my interest. Give me one example, if you would, from when you were Republican whip of when the use of the filibuster kicked your fanny.
Well, it just happens. You're in the majority one session, and then you're in the minority the next. And so you just put the boot on a different foot, and you say, now, we need you guys to hold tough. And the purpose of it is cloture, which is to cut off debate. And you have to have the horses to do that. And if you don't, you don't cut off debate. But it does. I know it's frustrating. It just drove us crazy. But nevertheless, it can be the best thing in your arsenal of legislation, or it can be the worst on the other side, and that's the way it works.
It drove you crazy, but you also successfully drove your colleagues crazy when you filibustered during the debate over campaign finance reform. And I'm wondering, Julian, you know, Robert Byrd very famously filibustered for 14 hours during the debate over civil rights. Julian, As Todd was saying, when people are in the majority, they don't like filibustering. When they're in the minority, they don't. But filibustering isn't necessarily a bad thing. There have been times when it's been used to good effect.
Well, look, obviously there are some who defend the filibuster on both sides of the aisle. During the 1930s, Huey Long would use this to filibuster bills that he thought were favorable to the wealthy rather than to the poor. I think the question that gets raised with the current situation is that the filibuster is now used too much, meaning we now have an expectation that every bill in the Senate requires 60 votes. It's become the norm when that's not in the rules of the Senate. And, you know, for much of the 40s and 50s, much of the legislation still passed through a simple majority. And I think that's what you're hearing in terms of reform. Can we get this so we don't eliminate the filibuster, but that's not how the Senate operates all the time? Filibusters have increased in frequency since the 1960s, and they're used much more regularly.
So, Julian, you'd pare them back instead of, it used to be 67 until 1975, now it's 60 votes. You'd pare it back to maybe 55 in the spirit. You know, the whole point of 60 votes is you have to form some level of consensus. In this case, the Democrats, the majority, can't just roll over the minority.
I don't have a number in mind, and I'm just talking about the reformers. But one idea, lower the number needed to end the filibuster. Another could be more change in norms, that there's some kind of agreement not to use this all the time and to save it for more extraordinary moments.
Senator Simpson, 55 votes for a filibuster. Quickly, what do you think?
No, I don't think it'll ever go to that because you have power in one person. Look at Sanders and Lieberman and Nelson. They're playing big dog, and they've got the horses. But filibuster is the savior and demon all rolled into one glorious legislative protective shield.
Senator Alan Simpson, former senator from Wyoming and Senate Republican whip for 10 years. Julian Zelizer, congressional historian and author of Arsenal of Democracy, The Politics of National Security from World War II to the War on Terror. Thank you both for joining us.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.